With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, it's me, Jim Campbell. Welcome to Fantasy Fiverside, where today I have with me a guest you'll have seen everywhere from Doctor Who to Taskmaster to Fleabag. It's comedian, rapper, actor, screenwriter, paper writer, everything else you could imagine, an early champion of the football ramble, Doc Brown.
Yes.
How you doing, mate?
I'm all right.
Good to see you.
I forgot about the football ramble element.
Yeah, a lot of people forget about the football ramble.
Yeah. Sort of football ramble revivalist, would that be my credit?
Early adopter, maybe?
Early adopter. I remember meeting with Pete and he'd had enough. It was over.
Yeah, this is news to me.
I'd become a massive fan, you know. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I just remember sort of trying to G him up and then getting those first live shows booked.
Yeah, he's quite a defeatist man, is Pete. But yeah, those first live shows are a really big thing for us because actually...
It was a game change, wasn't it?
It was. We'd met a lot of our listeners before and it was always really nice. But the love we got from everybody was like, oh, wow. Like, this really means something to a lot of people. It's really, really nice.
And my wife designed the stage.
Yes.
Got like some AstroTurf, made a little penalty box D.
Yeah. Didn't you? You had some... You almost had some work experience, kids filming and stuff, didn't you?
That's
something
right.
Like that.
Yeah,
it was the Arcola Theatre, Dalston. What heady days.
Heady
and also,
days.
I think we might be one of the few live acts that have more successful opening acts. So you started that tradition as well. So yeah, here we are on Fantasy Fiverside. So Ben, as it's pretty well known, you are a Crystal Palace fan.
Mm.
You did their FA Cup song recently.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
The voice of VAR at Selhurst Park.
Are you actually?
Yeah.
That is massive.
Decision.
Nah.
No penalty.
Is that something you just do? Like, do you bring along a megaphone? Or is that
no, it's all pre-recorded. I was doing some work for the club and they said, oh, do you mind if we record you saying these things? I was like, yeah, cool, man.
How do you feel about that now that everyone hates VAR? Are you worried that that's going to rub off on you?
I was doing an interview for the club and at the time they asked me about VAR and I talked about how much I hated it. Even though we'd benefited from it massively at the time, I think we'd just beaten Villa with a last-minute reprieve, disallowed the... A Villa goal, which led to us winning. I still don't like it, but I think the main issue with it is how it works.
Yeah, totally.
It just doesn't work properly, and it will presumably with our technological advances, it's got to work properly at some point. So we just have to be patient till then. But for now, yeah, it's fair to say, man, it kills so many elements of the game.
Yeah.
There's a couple elements that are fun, but mainly if you're a neutral viewer.
Offside for me.
Offside is ridiculous.
If you're an atom offside, like...
What happened? Didn't we used to have benefit of the doubt for the striker?
Yeah, I thought that as well. And I think this was never in the rules, but people used to talk about daylight, didn't they? Or there being some sort of, like, as you say, advantage to the attacker. But now, they're taking goals away. Goals are the best bit.
Well, that's the key thing. And that's what I said in that interview, I remember, because at the time, I'd actually looked at some VAR stats and they'd taken away way more goals than they'd actually granted out of a controversial situation. So at that point... of the season, early on in season, they disallowed 9 goals and they'd given 1 and that was a penalty.
Yeah.
And penalties are pretty boring to watch in a game. Do you know what I mean? Unless it's a penalty shootout.
Absolutely.
So they're essentially just killing all the flowing elements of what is the most flowing, most simple game in the world. They've overcomplicated it.
It's been a victory for the rules rather than the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's boring. Let's move on from it because it's awful.
Yeah, and everybody talks about it. So.
Yeah, so let's get straight into your team.
Mm.
You've picked a really interestingly balanced team. I think that in the imaginary league here, they're going to probably do quite well, actually. So tell me who you've gone for in goal.
Well, I've gone for José Luis Chilavert. If you look at once you get through the team, you'll basically work out how old I am, I reckon. Do you know what I mean? Because it's all players who fascinated me as a kid in some way, bar one, who we'll get onto in a bit. But I went for Chilavert because I think five-a-side, you need goals from everywhere. And Chilavert surely could just score from where he stood.
Yeah, I always think that about those.
Some insane toe punt.
Those goalkeepers that scored loads of goals, like him and Rogerio Ceni and a few others, it's got like over 100, which is insane.
Yeah.
You do feel like they can just score at will.
Yeah, and also I think five-a-side is it's madcap and it's fun.
Yeah.
So it's not like picking a fantasy side for the Premier League. You know, I was just hearing in the news the other day because Man City have missed so many penalties.
Yeah.
They're talking about Ederson. They reckon he's in training, he's the best penalty
taker.
Makes
sense.
But because Premier League is so devoid of fun, you'll never see him taking a penalty for the fear of what will happen if it's rebounded, right? What I love about Chilavert is, did he ever give a shit?
No.
About a rebound?
No.
He'd be there on the edge of the D taking a free kick where anything could happen.
Yeah.
Right?
And he...
some poor sod standing on the goal line for him going, oh, Jose's gone up again. I just have to wait. That's them's the rules.
Apparently that started when he moved to Spain. He started just...
That's surprising.
I know, right? Yeah, he started practicing free kicks after games. He'd do like something like 100. He had like a set amount, between a certain amount he would do after games. And he got so good at it, so like the coaches took notice and were like, you know what? And then he got 67 goals. I'll correct myself from earlier. He got 67 goals in his career, 8 in internationals, including 4.
Taking free kicks at international level.
4 goals in the World Cup qualifying campaign for 2002.
Important games.
Yeah, absolutely massive. Scored a hat-trick once and also scored from his own half against River Plate. Which, I mean, it's...
Yeah, like modern managers would have epileptic fits
imagine
coming up and doing that.
Any one of those things is so notable in its own right, but he managed to do all of them. And I think there's this idea, isn't there, that players like Ederson are like a new breed of goalkeeper that are comfortable with the ball at their feet. That,
if you're
that
of
is
a certain
not
vintage, you remember when goalkeepers had the freedom to do crazier things, you know?
Yeah.
And there's various keepers from... you know, when I was a kid watching football in the 90s, who really took the Maverick thing to a next level, and Shilovere is one of them. For the younger listeners, we should probably describe his sort of style of shooting, because it wasn't like a Rashford or Ronaldo, even though it had that kind of pace. He really levered that ball.
It was like he was keeping a goal kick down.
Keeping a goal kick down. Terrifying to defend against.
Yeah, like, completely. And also, I think for the opposition goalkeeper, there's a psychological aspect to that, right? You don't want to be beaten by your opposite number.
By another keeper, definitely.
So he's in their head straight away.
Big time.
He is an imposing man as well, a very huge physical presence. Mm. And the thing with Shilovere as well that might worry me, managing him, which obviously you've signed up to here, is that... You know, do you want him shooting every time he gets the ball? Like, and if you don't, how are you telling him not to do that?
Yeah, I mean, this is why I sort of picked my super sub, because I thought he might help with that. Because when I looked at the five, it is kind of five unmanageable men. So it's a concern.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not a concern, but at the same time, do you remember what they used to say? Opposition managers when Arsenal were like the Invincibles, and even like back to like 2002 into that Invincible season afterwards, opposition managers used to always say, you just go out there and you just see these massive men and you just think,
oh no,
you're never in for a hiding necessarily, because Arsenal didn't score a massive amount of goals in a single game, but you just knew that first goal went in and you just weren't going to be able to lay a hand on them.
Yeah.
They were just massive and they were so aggressive.
Yes. And so, you've got that from the off.
So hopefully with this team, like, there'd be that thing of when they walk into the cage.
Yes.
The other team go, oh, bloody hell.
So another thing about Shilovere is he was fond of a bold declaration. He said he'd be the best keeper at France 98 before the tournament.
Brilliant.
And he was in the team of the tournament with Barthez, weirdly. And he said before they played Spain in Japan and Korea in 2002, that if he got a free kick within range, he would score. And he had a free kick and Casillas saved it. And he also made a mistake for a Morientes goal. But like, as a British person... Like, if you are walking into that cage and he's immediately chipping off at the opposition, is every atom of you not cringing in some way? You think, oh, don't.
Definitely. I think I wanted to pick players that added a little je ne sais quoi, and I think he's the perfect starting point.
Yeah, and also an amazing goalkeeper.
Yeah. I mean, he was good at what he did. And, you know, similarly with other sort of mavericks between the sticks, The basics of what they do is quickly forgotten.
Yes.
Because of some mad shit that they did outside of that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I can't think of many goalkeepers that don't need a screen. He is very much one of them. But you've got a screen in there anyway. Who have you got as your first outfield player?
I thought I want somebody who doesn't mind just hanging back, especially for... Because Shilovere... Actually, he was the second name on the team sheet. This guy was the first, but... I just knew I wanted a sort of rush keeper. So I hadn't decided who. And then I thought, right, I need someone in between the sticks. And I also wanted to have someone with a Palace connection in there. So I went for Eric Young, who, again, you know, younger listeners probably won't remember, but he was this rangy, lanky black dude who played for a while for Palace in the defence. And you never saw his eyes. Because he always wore this headband really low down. No, just over his brow.
Oh,
so
wow.
You couldn't really see his eyes because they were like shadowed by the headband.
That's
and it was
quite
just
creepy.
It was
like a serial killer football.
Yeah, it was a real weird look. and when I was a kid at Palace, used to call him the ninja.
Yes.
Obviously because of the headband. But also he was combative and he was tough to get by because he had these... He wasn't the quickest, but he just had those legs, the sort of go-go gadget legs.
Yeah.
And he'd get around you or he'd make that last-ditch tackle. And he was just hard as nails. He just had no interest of anything happening over the halfway line unless he was forced to go
there.
Nice.
Well, that's exactly what you want, isn't it?
For a last-minute corner.
Yeah.
So I just thought, you're going to have someone like Shilovere in there, have a dude who has got go-go gadget legs and arms to cover that little goal, is happy to stay there, and will just clean a striker out if needs be.
Nice. So I looked into Eric Young. He's not someone I'm that familiar with. Although actually he played for Wimbledon in the FA Cup win in 1988 over Liverpool, which is pretty massive. He also played for Brighton.
I didn't know that.
Does that bother you?
No, I mean, it's one of the
weirdest derby ever, isn't it?
It is. I'm one of those Palace fans that I get a lot of stick because I just have no ill feeling towards Brighton whatsoever. It's just, it's fine. Like,
yeah,
they're just another similarly sized team struggling along. I don't really have.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with them, and I love Brighton the place. Mm. Like, so I don't really have a reason other than me saying to myself, "Oh, I'm going to inherit this thing," which is so specific.
Yeah, wasn't it from like a specific tackle in a game or something?
Well,
it was like
one flash point. It's kind of twofold. It began with a player rivalry between Mullery and Venables, and then when they went into they were rivals at Tottenham, the captaincy. When they went into management, they still had a lot of ill feeling against each other. And then we went in this series of FA Cup replays against Brighton, where we were managed by Venables and they were managed by Mullery. And in those days, it probably still happens now. I'm sure behind closed doors, you see it with Mourinho and Guardiola and people like that saying to their players, look, you know how I feel about this prick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just do a job. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in the old days, they blatantly just said, just kick these pricks. I can't stand it. I want to see the look on his face when you break this guy's leg. That kind of, so it was a bad tempered series of games.
Yeah.
And often when that happens, you still see it in football now, that bad temper, you know, the fans and the players and the management, the bench, psychologically for 90 minutes, there's loads of weird stuff happening. I'd love to see a study of it. The way like fans can get on a player's back, like you saw with Xhaka at Arsenal this season, and then his performance gets worse and worse, and then it creates this whole sort of horrible atmosphere, and then Xhaka misses games. Everything is linked, right? So that rivalry between Venables and Mullery filtered down to the players. That was on the pitch. Ill feeling, bad blood between players, bad challenges. Ill feeling grows in the crowd, defending their players, you know, with their own vitriol. And then after the game, I can't remember if it was the first one or the replay, there was some violence between fans. And that was it, really. Because, you know how easy that can happen. So the next time you meet, it's going to be like, oh, these guys from last time.
I remember you.
So it's just built over the years. But people, as that story faded into legend, I think a lot of people outside of the two clubs assumed it was because we're very far south.
Yes.
And there's one road out of the southeast London down to
you're
Brighton.
Connected by Southern Rail, who, let's be honest, are the real villains of the piece.
They are the real villains.
I believe Seagulls is adapted from Eagles, isn't it? It's like a sarcastic
I've heard
chant.
That, and I don't know if it's true, because obviously there's good reason to be the Seagulls down on the south coast. If it is true, it's quite petty. It doesn't look good on Brighton. I like Seagulls versus Eagles. I like all the bird-related derbies, especially when we play Spurs, because they've got a chicken.
Yeah, a cockerel. But it's a chicken on a basketball.
It's a chicken on a basketball. Which is, you know, it's about as aggressive as the canary for Norwich. You want an aggressive bird, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think the eagle's winning.
Actual eagle.
Any harpy eagles? They're the most terrifying bird in existence.
They really are.
Evil things.
Don't like looking at vultures or turkeys either.
Yeah.
You don't want to be called
the turkeys.
You
don't want to be the turkeys. The vultures is all right, although it doesn't say a lot about you.
It doesn't say good things.
Yeah, I think Palace are winning that. So back to Eric Young. This is such a little snapshot of what it was like for those players who just missed out on the years before what was then the Premiership.
Right, yeah.
He started training as an accountant while he was playing in non-league before he became a professional.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and then when he finished, and funnily enough, I think went back to non-league just because he loved the game, he finished his training as an accountant, and he's now an accountant for a construction company. It's like, oh man, like if you were 4 or 5 years younger, like you probably, you'd have your own like sports agency or something now.
Oh mate, you can do anything now. You just set, I was just going to set up my own fashion brand.
Yeah,
sure,
exactly.
It'll probably do all right for the first few years until you realize you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, that
because
you're just
you've just got so much money.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that show, and maybe this was towards the end of the sort of Premiership as it was. There was a show on BBC One called Life After Football.
Mm.
And I can't remember if it was Alan Shearer who...
Alan Hansen?
It's Alan Hansen, that's right. And it was really interesting the way he did it. He met with players who were about to retire, players who'd long retired, and players who'd just retired. And, you know, it was quite a melancholy show.
Yeah.
you see the disillusionment of certain people, like Gazza is like, oh, I'm going to come back. And you're like, please, Gazza, just
Gazza,
allow
stop
it.
This. Yeah.
And then you had people like Rio Ferdinand, who was just like, yeah, like it was like so positive. He's like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to set up my fashion brand, my music label. Yeah. If I do punditry, I reckon I can do that. And you're thinking, he's probably going to be all right.
Yeah.
And then there was Neil Webb, who was like, oh, I just didn't know what to do. Because, you know, at United, everything was done for you. You know, if you needed a dentist appointment, then, you know, they'd make sure you were there. So, I had no idea how to get a dentist appointment for myself. And you're thinking, mate, just go to a dentist. And yeah. He goes, and then, you know, when the work dried up, I just went into the pub, put my hands up and said, can anyone give me a job? I was thinking, surely Job Centre would be.
Yeah, yeah.
What is with this dude?
There's something a little bit crass
just
about
so tragic.
Alan Hansen presenting that as well, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like Ed Sheeran presenting a program like called like Life After Busking.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, so what happened? Yeah. I've done all right out yeah, of it actually. Like, I'm busking at Wembley now.
I don't know if you've noticed, I am. Yeah, I'm kind of a big deal post football. But what's going to happen with you, you sad guys? Yeah, but that's really interesting to hear about Eric Young because. You know, from a fan perspective, Crazy Gang and Palace, and we were something of a Crazy Gang. So we were a real ragtag group.
Also, presumably sharing Selhurst Park at the time,
course,
right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you don't. There's certain players you get that mythology around, and Eric Young was one of them. And the last thing you'd want to hear is that he was an accountant.
Yeah,
maybe he was still like, you know, he was crushing things at the construction company with his
still
bare
with the
hands
with the headband on,
yeah, catching the droplets. Accountancy, yeah, that's a surprise.
It had the foresight though to get incredible foresight, really. Right. But there you go. So let's move on from Eric Young. Who have you gone for next? I know who you've gone for next. I'm very excited about it.
Let's see. Okay, so I mean, you can't really describe a five-a-side as having a midfield or anything like that. So no. I've just gone goals.
Yeah.
I've just gone goals, goals, goals. So the next three positions are all just goals, different kinds of goals. So next up, again, like for those trying to work out my age, this will probably put a nail on it. Because when I was like 15 in school, if anyone hit a volley from any kind of distance and it went anywhere near the goal, we'd scream out this man's name as if describing ourselves. And that's Tony Yeboah.
Yeah.
Ghanaian lad who came to Leeds in a time when there was like African players were a big deal in those days. Like if an African dude came, you were like, ooh, what are you going to get?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you going
to
get?
And it was around that time where we started to get players coming into the Premier League from everywhere. And it was like an education on the size of the world.
Totally. Like, you know, in like 92, 93, I remember like, each team would have a foreign guy. You know what I mean? Or a couple of foreign. And we'd all be like, oh, he's the crazy foreign guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But Limpar in reality, he was like John Jensen. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Tony Yeboah is still kind of a novelty, I'd say.
Mm.
But he just scored these goals that just captured the imagination if you were a young football fan. Just crazy volleys. He'd always be able to catch the ball at one of those really tricky heights by readjusting his body.
Yeah. And he had an incredible knack of scoring off the underside of the bar, really specifically.
Which, aesthetically speaking, is such a satisfying goal.
I think that's the best way to score a long ranger, unless you somehow get it stuck in the stanchion, which has happened like once. It was probably him anyway. I remember that the goal he scored against Liverpool. Do you remember that?
Mm.
So that was in the summer holidays in 1995. I was at my Uncle Dave's house and he had Sky. We didn't have it at home, which was like, so I saw that goal live. And back then that was like a rarity, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like that was
course.
A big deal. And that's one of my favourite goals ever, just because the goal's brilliant because of that memory as well. And Yeboah was so good for that. He really stood out as one of those players from that era that got you, that you would go out of your way to watch.
Big time. And he looks super excited every time he scored, which is what you want. I've never been into the whole, unless it's like Cantona, I've never been into the whole like, I'm too cool to celebrate. Or I love seeing a player just explode with emotion.
And
you can imagine what it must have been like in Ghana without the international coverage that we've got now, but they would have heard about him doing bits in Yorkshire in one of the biggest leagues in the world. And he must have been a folk hero there pretty much overnight.
I think he was. He owns a chain of hotels now called Yagola or something like that.
Brilliant.
And I remember one of the things I remember about Sky back then as well.
Up like, in the
remember?
Volley suite.
Yeah. The bar is just called the Crossbar. this was back when Sky replays used to whoosh. Do you remember that? It would
whoosh,
go,
that's
whoosh,
right, yeah.
And then
yeah,
you get, and right. then you get the Tony Yubawa smacking it in from 40 yards out. And he used to wag his finger as a celebration. And I was always
that's
like,
that's right. There was a bit of finger wagging.
Who's he telling off? Who is that for? I don't
maybe
really...
it was a kind of told you so thing. Because I think, even up till now, I've got to say, I talk about this with a lot of my black mates who love football, that the little undercurrent of prejudice against African players has always been, it was blatant in those days. There's still a bit of it now.
Yeah.
It's only in the past couple years that we've had people like Kante. I know he's not, he doesn't play for an African country, but obviously African heritage. We've had people like Kante being described as intelligent.
Yes.
That's like a relatively new thing.
Yeah.
Up until very recently, we've always had this thing about African players like, oh, you know, like they always said about Bolasie when he was at Palace. You just don't know what he's going to do next. I don't think he does either.
Yeah.
He's a fucking professional footballer.
Yeah.
He's unorthodox, but that's his style. Yeah.
He's going to get to the wing and he's going to cross it.
I don't know what to do with a ball. Let's just see what happens.
And actually,
he's trying stuff because that's his style. He's quite brave on the ball. Sometimes it goes wrong.
And that athleticism that Bolasie had is another thing that's always
played up. That is so outdated, outmoded. And in those days of Tony Yeboah, you'd hear it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
like
if Kante was a player in the 90s, the way he plays, that way that he drives forward, breaks things up, drives forward, that would have been described as a lack of discipline. Do you know, it would have been, wouldn't it?
Totally,
that would have been like
positional
kind of recklessness rather than the benefit of the doubt that this, as you say, this guy's a professional who knows what he's doing and he's in the team for a reason.
And Makalele just would have been a beast, none shall pass.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, rather than a man who
bouncer,
invented
almost
a new position in football.
Absolutely. But Yeboah, I miss him. I miss talking about him.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We've not come to where you fit into this system. Where are you putting yourself in the team?
Oh, I didn't realize that was a thing.
Oh, well, you're playing manager.
Am I in there?
Yeah,
I'm playing manager. Well, I mean, I was always, when I played Sunday League, when I played for my uni team, I was always a right back, always. And as I got slower and slower and slower into my like early 30s, I'd lost any pace. I was never that fast, but you know, when I lost any pace that I had, I became a bit of a liability at right back, especially when there'd be kids in the other team.
Sounds familiar.
And so in my Sunday League team, they pushed me up front. I was after a couple of games. I think we won this league one season, and I actually scored the goal that, I mean, obviously I didn't win the whole league just with that goal, but technically we won the game that won the league with a goal that I scored off a corner. And then after that, then the following season, just had that confidence to just go up for
Why
corners.
The hell is that not on your Wikipedia page? Go and edit that yourself.
2-1 it was. It was so good. And we started the game 1-0 down. But yeah, I started getting goals quite a lot the following season. And then in the end, they were like, look, Smithy, you're a liability at right back. Just hang around up front. Just be a lump up front. And we'll play with two up front. We'll have the faster guy next to you. And we'll try that. And the first couple of seasons, I got a lot of goals that way. And then just my whole body just started packing up. And by the time I'd moved from Sunday League to playing like the Power League 8s,
yeah,
it was just, you know, every season it felt like there was another team full of like 19, 20-year-olds. And it's like, oh my God, this is just getting embarrassing.
Football's hard.
It really is. So long story short, the past sort of 15 years of my life, I've been a striker, really.
Mm. So even more on Eric Young.
So yeah, I think it's a tricky one for Eric because everybody in this team is just a goal scorer. But I would say I'd be the one scoring the least goals. So I think I'd come on in case of injury and just, mate, I'd probably get a few assists, probably get a few rebounds.
Yeah.
But I mean, the players I've got in there, they're quite sort of focused on one thing. Mm.
So speaking of rebounds, I think your next choice is probably going to be getting a lot of those.
Well, this guy is, again, I mean, you can work out exactly what it is now age-wise. This guy represents my first World Cup that I remember like being obsessed with. First World Cup that it affected me emotionally. 1990 in Italy, England went out in the semi-final. I cried, stormed to my room, slammed the door and didn't come out for a number of hours.
Wow.
My
Do you
dad
remember
had
what
to
you were
coax
doing?
Me
Just
out.
Crying.
I think I was kicking stuff, tearfully, like tears dripping on my Panini album, like flicking through. In those days, I could never get over the what ifs.
Yeah.
And 1990 was a really tough season for me because there's so many what ifs that stayed with me all the way into the millennium.
Mm.
Because I felt in that last four teams, England were the momentum we had. Yeah. We were the best. And the World Cup final was awful. Two sides just like slugging it out in West Germany, the old West Germany and Argentina.
Pretty bad World Cup, all told. It's the I have memories of the England semi-final. I don't remember it
really
that clearly,
poor quality.
But it's known for being a bad World Cup, isn't it? And yet here, it has this huge kind of significance to us
because of what happened
to
us, you know. And it was different to the semi-finals we just experienced with Gareth Southgate. You know, Bobby Robson was getting so much grief. The players were getting so much grief. The press had just finished us off before that World Cup. And we were just up against it. And something about the camaraderie was incredible. And they were so easy to support as a little kid. I loved every one of them. So an England-Italy final would have been just perfect.
Yes.
And obviously Italy playing in their own country, it was special for them as well. And there's one player who wasn't even supposed to be there, I don't think.
I think it was an injury. Late, wasn't
or
it?
He was called up late, something like that. And I think he's not from the mainland either, is he? He's from the, I think he might be from one of the islands off of Italy. He's just a real strange fella.
Mm.
And he looks like not quite a hitman, but an assistant to a hitman, perhaps. He's got these crazy eyes. He's like 5 foot nothing. He's tiny. He's got the body shape of an Archie Gemmell. His name's Toto Scalacci. Toto is short for something that I don't remember. Salvatore,
yes.
Salvatore. And
so he's from Palermo originally, which
okay,
I believe is, yeah.
Right. So he came into the side with no expectations whatsoever. And he just suddenly just couldn't stop scoring in this World Cup.
He came on as a sub, didn't he? And he scored and forced his way into the team in a World Cup,
right,
which is amazing.
Mm.
And I think he scored 6 goals, won the Golden Boot and was player of the tournament as well, which for those of you too young to understand this, I've been thinking about this. And I think the closest thing I can get to explaining that would be if Danny Welbeck had done that in the last World Cup for England. Like, it's not a perfect comparison, but it was that out of the blue.
Yeah. It's actually crazy. And no disrespect to him, he didn't do a massive amount before or afterwards.
No, he played 16 times for Italy.
So
in total.
Danny Welbeck's not maybe not a bad comparison, but I mean, it was just so strange, and it sort of represented how crazy that World Cup for me was. And like I say, there's so many what ifs that bugged me, and it was the same summer that I'd had this devastating experience with Crystal Palace in the FA Cup final. Mm. And the what ifs around that have never, ever left me either, because similar to Bobby Robson, Ferguson was under a huge amount of pressure at Man United. And if us being minnows, I think if we'd have beaten them, he might have gone.
Yeah.
Instead, they went to the Cup Winners' Cup, which, you know, that would have been massive for Palace.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. Even if we were rubbish in it, it would have been massive. We could have attracted some bigger name players. And then the Premiership, as it was, started, and all this money came in, and Man United were the team that attracted this new wave of players. They won the Premiership, and we got relegated.
Yeah.
So 1990 for me, for England and for Palace, was this huge what-if thing. And I think to cloud all the depression that I have about that, because we've all seen what Man United went on to do, and we've all seen what Palace went on to do, which has become a yo-yo, nothingy team. England never went, apart from, you know, Euro 96. We treat Euro 96 like it was a World Cup. It wasn't. Yeah, it was totally. The Euros.
Yeah.
England never went on to do anything either. So to sort of add a smokescreen to all that depression, Toto Scarlatti's like a real sort of big positive.
The shining light.
Yeah,
in that.
Memory.
I believe in Italy, the tournament is sort of known as the Magical Knights of Toto Scarlatti, which is just beautiful.
Brilliant.
Isn't it? Because it was
sounds like an animated feature.
It really does.
Going to come out at some point.
If you watch back the goals, it's the eyes in the celebration,
yeah,
isn't it?
So white.
It's
you can really see the whites
absolutely.
All the way around the pupils.
So would you be joining in those celebrations on the pitch?
Well,
because that'd be a dream come true,
Yeboah,
right?
Was another one who would show you the whites of his eyes when he scored. Mm. You know, you see the whites all around his pupils. And I think those two together could really offset the fact that you'll never see Eric Young's eyes in any shape or form. So that's quite nice. And like I've already said, I love an overblown celebration, a big bundle against the walls of the cage, that kind of vibe. I'm not sure who in my five would like to be touched, but I'm hoping, you know, we could have some real male bonding.
It's actually a terrifying group of people to celebrate at the moment, isn't it? Sheila Vare, obviously,
yeah.
Nuts. Eric Young, as you say, no eyes, which is scary. Like the xenomorph in Alien doesn't have any eyes, and that makes
exactly.
It scarier.
Yep.
How can it see you? Tony Yeboah celebrates in a fairly robust way as well. Mm-hmm. Scarlatti leading the charge.
Scarlatti looking like a little hitman. Yeah, I mean, my last guy I wouldn't want to touch at all.
No, so let's hear about him.
Well, this was a twofold choice. There, and people might be surprised by this, but there are very few greater goal scorers in the history of the game.
Yes.
Statistically. But also, there's very few people with a mind like this guy. I mean, he was a genius. What he achieved in the game is, I believe, unrivaled in the modern era. Mm. You know, there's people getting close, but not with teams like he did it with. The only sort of thing that sullies his career is not even him. It's probably the quality of his son.
Sorry, Steve Bruce. You put Steve Bruce in.
And of course, I'm talking about Nigel Clough's dad, Brian Clough.
Yes.
Now, I didn't know anything about his playing career as a kid. I knew him as the manager of 90s Forest.
Yes.
Right?
See, this is a funny thing, isn't it?
Green
it's like
jumper,
that slightly scary, weird man.
Yeah. And he was always good value in press conferences. So I sort of liked him like I liked Alex Ferguson. I just thought, this guy's no nonsense. He's never going to bullshit you.
Mm.
He's kind of funny. You know, I remember that game where he'd slapped a pitch invader. You know, I just thought, this guy's a character. But I didn't really have any idea. I mean, my dad told me about like the Forest side that won the European Cup. But to me, that was just like Villa winning the European Cup or Ipswich. I was just like, that's just something that happened in my dad's time, whatever. Now, of course, the access we have to documentary footage and archives and stuff. I can't remember the name of that Forrest film. It is amazing.
I've not seen it, actually.
Check it out. And I'm sure listeners will be screaming the name of it.
Yeah.
But look up the Forrest film that came out a couple years ago. Number one, the soundtrack is absolutely blinding. Sort of end of the 70s. There's so much good funky stuff on there. But what Clough did with that team.
Mm.
I mean,
Back to back European Cups. We talk about Leicester winning the league.
With a team that he got promoted.
Yeah, it's just...
In English football. It's insane.
It's like my brain doesn't have the range to appreciate what that is, almost, you know? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you just can't... the reason I say I can't think of anything like it in our era is because... Of course, what Liverpool are doing right now is incredible. Of course, what Arsenal did, the Invincibles, is incredible. You know, Man United winning the treble in 99 is incredible. But, I mean, yeah, it's just different.
Yeah.
Like, the way you build a team is completely different. You know, you if you've got the resources, you can just put a team together. Alex Ferguson definitely built a team. Wenger definitely built a team.
Yeah.
Guardiola makes players better.
Yeah.
But they're great players that he can afford to put in there. Mourinho, yes. I think you could probably argue, doesn't make great players better, but again, has always been able to afford the best players and has the nous to get them playing in a certain style that wins trophies. Klopp, I think, improves players, but again, endless resources.
Mm.
Find me someone who's going to get a club promoted from the equivalent of the Championship, win the league, and then win the European Cup twice.
The only sort of modern comparison would be getting Nottingham Forest promoted and then winning the Champions League with them twice. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I think if Chris Wilder gets Sheffield United into Europe this season, that might be the closest.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just banana. Or maybe didn't Newcastle come up and finish second one year?
Possibly.
So maybe Keegan.
But still.
I'm not winning anything. You know, like, this guy was winning things. So anyway, that's not necessarily why he's in the squad, although his winning mentality is crucial.
Yeah.
He's got that over everyone else in the team.
A great example of that was when he was at Derby, he sacked two tea ladies because he saw them laughing after a defeat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there you go. He only understood the language of winning.
Yes.
And when that was unavailable to him, he went mental, as we all know from the Leeds debacle.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, throughout his career, whenever you look at any point of it, there's always been that friction when things haven't been going well. And
to talk
about Brian Clough the sportsman rather than Brian Clough the manager as well.
Yes,
251
the
goals.
Reason he's in the team.
In 274 games in
and
his
this
career.
This was something I had no idea about until Eva was reading the book that they made the film out of.
Damned United.
It was either reading that or watching the documentary. I can't remember. But I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Is that a typo?
I know.
He's scored in basically every game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. His stats are unreal. And people don't really think about it. And the scariest part of it, didn't he get injured like in his mid-20s or something?
I think he retired at 29, but he had a two-year rehabilitation and came
really
back. So it was like 27,
up,
I think, was realistically
when he ended
his career.
So he would have got more goals.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
In that era.
Yeah, he played for England twice. But apparently the reason that he didn't play more was because he figured that he scored goals from the centre, so he wouldn't go out to the wings.
Right.
Which you can't really do that for England.
His friction with England as well, because he always had a weird relationship with England.
Yeah, I think he wanted a job a lot, but obviously, you know, that came with a lot of baggage. So this is the thing that you are signing up to yourself, right? Signing yourself up to as managing him.
It's a nigh impossible job.
Indeed. When he was a player, he was especially sort of bothered by Middlesbrough being sort of quite a leaky team. After a 6-6 draw against Charlton, just doesn't happen now, does it? Apparently, he asked his teammates how many goals they'd have to score in order to win a match, and then publicly accused some of them of betting against the team and deliberately letting in goals. So when you see that sort of scoring record, you think, oh, it must have all been rosy until he became a manager, but he'd always been this sort of prickly character.
A bit prickly. That's really interesting. And it also smacks of a player who knows his own worth and knows what real success should look like.
Yes.
I mean, I just heard in the news this morning, Messi's like come out publicly and like had a go.
Yeah, at Eric Abidal.
Eric Abidal. And like, it's just like, wow, like you have to be so good as a player to just go, right, all the top brass at this club, legends of the whatever, I'm
just
going, shat it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is what I imagine Brian Clough was like as a player and definitely was as a manager.
Yeah. So that said, I think with the personalities you've got in here, they're all very, very good. And Eric Young is someone who would, I imagine, follow instruction, which is, Clough loved that, didn't he? If you could do that, then he'd be all right with you.
Yeah.
I think you've got a good balance here to sort of nullify that aspect of him.
So, but I think it could get really messy really quickly for us if things, you know, suddenly went south, because there is a mercenary element to this team. and I did that because I just thought everyone's a winner. Do you know what I mean? They will not lose. But if we do go a couple goals down, I'm a little worried about temperament, which is why I picked the super sub non-football. He hopefully would square things and make everything okay.
Who have you gone for?
Well, I've gone for Sir David Attenborough because I just don't think anyone wants to let him down.
No,
and I think
he's the real king.
You know what they say. You know when they say when there's another classic racist thing that you get in football where there's foreigners in a derby, in an English derby. He won't know about this, but he won't know. Or the other one, they won't be ready for the Premier League. Kicking a ball into a net,
playing the sport.
They just won't be ready for the robustness of the. Why? It's just football.
Yeah,
it's and football actually, English weather. People traditionally have not actually been the best footballers. Yeah. But anyway, that always makes me laugh. So I think just to keep that slightly xenophobic trope going, I'd like to think that Eric Young could get Chilavert and Scalacci and Yeboah. Just explain what Attenborough means.
Yeah,
you know. And what he represents, and how if you do have a faith, you should probably disregard that right now and worship this man
absolutely
as your new god.
Yeah, I think the Attenboroughs, if we're going to have to have a royal family, can we transfer it to the Attenboroughs from the Windsors,
please? So that would be the thing, you know, instead of DVDs of the opposition and all of that, it'd just be like, you know, Life
Blue
on
Planet.
Earth, like- Secret Life of Plants. Blue Planet, definitely. Planet Earth.
So what era Attenborough are we talking? Because I'm a bit worried about him playing
five-a-side. I wouldn't
want to
put him
now.
In at 93. I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking the sort of maybe just pre-commissioning snooker for BBC Two.
Yeah. See, so that's something a lot of people don't know, isn't it?
he was a BBC commissioner.
And he also commissioned Monty Python's Flying Circus.
That's right. So, you know, sense of humour. He was sprightly enough to travel around the world and not just travel around the world, but, you know, go through pretty rugged terrains.
Yeah.
And come out unscathed. He was mates with Gerald Durrell, who was a pretty nutty guy. So they I think he wouldn't be afraid of, you know, laying down the law, but it would be his intelligence that everyone would have to bow down to. And of course, that Roy Hodgson effect of there probably isn't a hairdryer, but you just don't want to let your granddad down.
Absolutely.
Don't want to disappoint him.
Well, I was on a plane that David Attenborough was on once.
Wow. Okay.
And he's exactly right. And honestly, the atmosphere on that plane, everyone was so excited. Yeah, exactly. Just that he was there. And you felt blessed to be in the presence of a living legend.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that would probably... that would probably translate. And also, there's a theory that David Attenborough is the most well-travelled human in history,
which makes perfect sense. Yeah, he must be, yeah. That does make sense.
Even for those bloody foreigners amongst your team that don't know what he means, he could probably get it across.
Or a phrase in their language that he might be able to say. He might have a fact about their country or some of the wildlife from that might surprise them.
Yeah.
Get him on side. You know, he's not going to have to do any work to win over Clough or Young. And he is somebody that Clough will probably respect.
I don't know, Clough might be telling him facts about animals.
Oh, yeah,
bet you don't know this one.
Possibly. Now when? Still trying to call David Attenborough a young man.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's your team. That's fun. How do you think the post-match drink is going to go? Presuming everyone is getting involved.
I think I would actually love to have a drink with each of those players.
Mm.
I think they'd all have stories. I'd be fascinating. Maybe, I don't know if I want to hear about Eric's last tax year, but, you know, I reckon the rest would definitely have some fascinating stories to tell. And I'd like to think they'd all fancy one. We all know Clough fancied a drink, didn't we?
Yeah.
So, that wouldn't be a problem. Sadly. I think they probably all... can see them all being drinkers. I'm sure Chilavert would be drinking some kind of South American fire water.
Yeah, he's probably got his own drink that he invents.
Very possible.
One of those really, really strong ones. You know, very when you think you've made a cocktail when you're a teenager and it just ends up being sort of like grey.
Yeah,
can
exactly.
Imagine he'd probably be on that.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that.
If he even drinks, he might be one of those that doesn't. I don't know.
Possibly.
So, if
you're listening... Give us a shout later. Let us know.
So have you got a name for the team? Do you have an idea of the aesthetic?
Oh, I did pick a name, didn't I? I wrote it down. What is it? Angelos Sucios. Angeles Sucios FC, which means dirty faced angels.
Nice.
In Spanish.
Very
which
nice.
It's like homage to Chilavert. Because everything sounds better in like a Latin language.
Yeah, very
it?
Much so.
And yeah, when I saw the players, because at first I was just thinking my favourite sort of just memorable people, you know, thinking more about them as characters and whatnot. Then when I looked at them, I thought they're all sort of slightly controversial on the pitch for one reason or another, or you know, not necessarily liked by everybody, or you know, like in Toto's case, you know, someone who is a bit of a black sheep, even if he had the right temperament,
yeah.
You know. So I thought, yeah, they're like angels to me, but yeah, like with dirty faces. Like some people won't like them.
Mm.
So then I just thought Angels with Dirty Faces FC is just too long.
Yes.
And then when I saw the Spanish of it, which is just two words, like, great.
And it's got slightly threatening in Spanish.
Exactly.
Weirdly.
Yeah.
Don't know why.
Angels, if you did it properly, Angels with Dirty Faces, it would have the con in there for with. And so dirty faced angels.
Yeah, so what is it again in Spanish?
Angeles Sucios.
Yeah, it just sounds... It sounds threatening.
Could be angelic, could be hellish.
Yeah, indeed. And how about the kit? I think you picked a kit as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did do kit, which came just straight off the back of the name. Just black with gold halos.
Gold halos.
So it'd be like
hoops. So you wear it above your head.
So it'd be like Celtic hoops, but they'd be
nice.
Gold. So it'd be technically it would be angel rings around... your waist.
That is lovely.
And then black, because just black is badass. Everybody
yeah,
knows that.
With gold wings on the back, maybe around the numbers, or
possibly.
Is that yeah,
possibly. Yeah,
fair
because
enough.
it's all these guys would be pre-tats, so you could have angel wings. Nowadays, someone's bound to have fucking angel wings. On
yeah,
their,
yeah,
on their actual back.
Like yeah, there's so many like novelty kits now, aren't there? Like that waiter kit from a few years ago.
Oh yeah, and the sausage one.
Yeah,
like heck sausages.
Odd. Very,
was
very
really
odd.
Gross.
Really gross. Yeah. I don't think you could... It doesn't instill fear, does it?
No.
You are an advert for
really
a sausage.
Stupid. Really, really stupid.
Mm. Yeah.
So there you go. That's my lot.
Thanks for coming in. So is there anything you want to plug, Ben?
Oh, I don't know. When does this go out?
Well, we'll see. It's
one of those.
It goes in the rotation and we'll see when
okay,
it comes
well,
out.
Okay, well, if it comes out in February, do check out the new series on BBC One, 9 o'clock, I think, on Thursdays. But, you know, everyone watches on iPlayer anyway these days.
Series
it's called The Split. It's the second series of The Split with myself and Stephen Mangan and Nicola Walker. Pretty juicy storyline about divorce lawyers. That's a six-parter. So hopefully still going when this comes out. And if you miss that, what will be the next thing? Oh, it will be... this incredible thing I did with David Tennant and Danny Mays called Dez, which is about the serial killer Dennis Nilsson.
Oh, wow.
Which is an awesome period piece coming out on ITV later in the year. Kids book in the summer called Crumbs.
Not about Dennis Nilsson.
Not about Dennis Nilsson. Inspired by, but I've toned it down for the young ones.
Yeah, fair enough. A reimagining.
And I think that's about it. The rest of the stuff, I'm just writing, I'm acting in loads of stuff, but it won't be coming out anytime soon. So they'll be the things to look out for now. And yeah, just give us a shout on Instagram, I guess. Come say hello. It's a friendly place. Don't really do Twitter anymore. It just got a bit weird, didn't it?
Horrible, wasn't it?
Doc Brown. No, sorry. No, that's not what it is it? It's Doc Breezy 88 Instagram. So yeah, give us a shout there and we'll chat.
Cool. Well, thanks Ben for coming in, /Doc for coming in, and thank you guys for listening. We'll see you later.
Cheers, guys.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.